What do you see happening in Ukraine and Russia right now? What are you noticing?
Well, let's see. Today is what? Day 78 of the war. At this moment, we've got, I hesitate to call it a stalemate. That's not quite the right word. But the Russian advance in eastern and southern Ukraine is definitely stalled. And more weapon systems from the West are getting in, which are contributing to that. And the Ukrainians now have more people on the front line than the Russians do. I do expect a general Russian mobilization, and I do expect that to push the Ukrainians back and ultimately break their capacity. The limiting factor on both sides now is how quickly both sides can bring equipment into the war front. The West is starting to run low. Canada and Germany have exhausted most of their stores, and nobody wants to exhaust their frontline equipment so that they don't have a military. And building out supply chains in peacetime for this sort of stuff has always been a hard carry. So like Raytheon can only produce about 2,000 Javelin missiles a year, and they think it's going to take them over a year to increase that to 4,000. Well, we've already shipped them 2,000 missiles. We're starting to run out. We're not there yet, and there are some new systems like the howitzers with the Excalibur rounds that are potentially game-changing. So I don't want to be overly pessimistic for the Ukrainians here, but the Russians have a lot more stuff stashed. And if this turns into a war of attrition, the Russians have a lot more people too. So the challenge will be to get precision-guided munitions, well, that's going to have to be ground drops. It's going to have to be artillery in with good intelligence so you can decapitate each individual unit. And those systems are already there. We're already seeing some of that in the Donbass. That precision guided versus mass assault, it's the old Sparta versus Athens war, just in a different context. We'll see. Historically, the mass side tends to win this sort of conflict.
So perhaps a war of attrition here.
If it's a war of attrition, it's Russia's to lose.
I see.
Ukraine doesn't have the population, and the inflow of weapons is probably as good right now as it's going to be.
And for those who haven't read your first book, The Accidental Superpower, came out back in 2014, and you pegged it by 2022, we would see something like this. And here we are. In your perspective, what were the factors that led up to this?
Two big pieces. The first is geographic. The Russian space is bordered by a lot of mountains and a lot of deserts, but there's a lot of gaps between them. And so the Russians feel they need to concentrate forces in those gaps. There's nine of them. There's two on the other side of Ukraine. So Ukraine's just the start of getting to those gaps. The problem is that the people of those gaps, in cases of seven of the nine, they're not Russian. So the Russians have to conquer countries in order to concentrate forces. So that's the why. The why now is demographic. The Russian population started collapsing post-Cold War. Their birth rate halved and their death rate doubled. So this is really the last generation that can field an army and attempt this. If they didn't do this now, the next time there was a war and someone did come through one of those gaps, the Russians would have a small army to defend a huge frontier, and they couldn't pull it off. So they've got to plug those gaps now if they're going to survive to the second half of this century.
What, if any, advantages do you see for Ukraine, or what triggers might they pull that could help them in this situation?
Well, the Ukrainians have definitely outperformed, and the Russians have absolutely underperformed. We saw a policy change in most of the Western capitals at the start of the third week of the war, when it became apparent that the Ukrainians actually might be able to hang in there. Everyone was kind of preparing for what would it mean when the Russians were on NATO's border, the entire frontier. This is going to sound a little depressing, but they're doing everything they can right now. They're learning the new weapon systems as quickly as they can. They're making it count. They've developed a fantastic human intelligence network in the occupied territories and even in Russia. I'm spitballing here because I don't know this for sure, but there are a lot of really suspicious fires at industrial military facilities throughout Western Russia, and have been for a month. The Russians, this may be nothing more than the fact that Western techs are gone, and the Russians are not really good at safety. But this is a lot of fires in a lot of places that are really sensitive. It feels like there's something else going on. And the Ukrainians are the ones who could pull that off. They're also destroying their own physical infrastructure to stymie Russian advances. And then if you add in the Excalibur rounds and the howitzers, they can start decapitating Russian forces. They're doing all of these things to a degree that I would have never guessed was possible 10 weeks ago when the war started. I don't think anybody was predicting this. I don't know if it's going to be enough. Because once the Russians do a regular mobilization, and instead of 200,000 troops, they have 2 million troops in theater, that's a very different picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If Russia takes Ukraine, what do you see as the next step for Russia?
Well, the Russians have to get those gaps. One of them is Bessarabia, that modern day Moldova. One is the Polish gap. You can guess where that one is. One is the Baltic gap. That's Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania. So once the Russians are done with Ukraine, once it's pacified to their satisfaction, they will push on and there will be a direct NATO-Russian confrontation. What we know now, though, is that the Russians are not all that when it comes to war. So if we have a direct NATO-Russian fight, the Russians are going to be beaten soundly about the head and shoulders, and they will be forced into a humiliating strategic retreat all the way back to Russia, maybe even past the borders. And since they see this as an issue of national survival, if we get into that environment, they will probably escalate and they will probably bring nukes to the party. So it has become essential for NATO to make sure that the Russian army dies in Ukraine. And that's why we're sending everything that we can. I'm just not sure of how long we can keep it up.
That was a clip from my most recent interview with Peter Zion. To catch the full interview, be sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell.